check out the latest On With Origins podcast with Zest AI's Mike DeVere discussing the prevalence of artificial intelligence. Before we get started, a quick word from our sponsor, Community Financial's present CEO, Tansley Stern's new podcast, Despite Impossible. Now on to the show. Here with CU Broadcast. Welcome back to our continued coverage of the NASCA Summit here in beautiful Nashville, Tennessee. And in the studio lounge, we're talking a little economics today with Mr. Roger Tutoreau from, is it Kennesaw State University?
Kennesaw State University.
You are an economics professor there, and another stellar performance in there, Roger. This is the second time I've seen you, and it just keeps getting better. So well done in there.
Well, thank you. It's great to be out among my friends in the credit union industry. It's obviously exciting time in the economy. Everybody's still balancing out risk of recession versus not.
Yep.
And, of course, higher interest rates. I mean, just since you and I have seen each other, the Fed's raised several more times.
Yeah, that changes everything. Right. Yeah, we saw each other last fall, and, yeah, a lot has happened in those probably 6 or 7 or 8 months. So, yeah, so let's do a quick laundry list of what you talked about in there. I want to start out with consumer sentiment, I thought, which was a really interesting kind of the highs and lows. Do you want to give a quick summary on the consumer sentiment and how that reflects on the economy?
Yeah, we saw consumer sentiment come down during the pandemic, understandably.
Yep.
But it did not get to the lowest levels that we'd seen in 2008. But then last spring and early summer, when oil prices spiked, we actually saw the Michigan Sentiment Index get down to an all-time low.
Yep.
Now, it's well off the floor. It's doing a lot better, but it's still not back to what we would consider the normal range. And so that tells us that households, which would include a lot of the members of the credit union industry, are still under pressure.
Yeah, and I thought what you said, how gas prices really mess with our behavior a little bit, you know, because that is a big reflection of consumer sentiment, right?
Yeah, so we believe that people, because they see gas prices several times a day, they might fill up maybe a couple times a week, that we think it probably exerts a disproportionate impact on perceptions of inflation.
Yeah.
So the good news is those gas prices have come well down, but they may be edging up a little bit in some markets.
They are edging up. In Southern California, we're still in the fives.
Right.
So, and we're proud to say that. But yeah, I feel like I need to go to my credit union to get a loan every time I fill up my car. So that's a big thing. All right, let's talk about retail sales as well, because that, you know, affects everybody. So share with me what's the latest in retail sales, and then how does that affect consumer sentiment as well?
Yeah, the retail sales actually reflects consumer sentiment and confidence in the household sector about their income and employment. It's been very uneven. I mean, we had a very good data that came out for the month of July, but we'd also had a surge back in earlier part of the year as well. But if you look at it over a longer horizon, retail sales are moving up kind of in line with inflation. The real gains in retail sales really aren't that significant.
Yeah.
And again, that's one of the problems. Everything has been distorted by the inflation we've wrestled with the last 18 to 24 months.
Yeah, talk about that distortion, because some of that, when you take away some numbers, you put some numbers in, that can really, because you were talking about how everyone's like, oh wow, retail sales are up, but if you throw in the inflation, they're actually really flat, right?
Yeah, I mean, you might look at numbers and say retail sales are up 5%, but if inflation's running at 5%, that means the actual volume of product in the stores is kind of washed out.
Yeah.
It's unchanged.
Yeah. Indeed. All right, now you talked about something else. Leading economic indicators is a great way to kind of forecast what's going to be happening a few months down the road. So share with us a little bit about that, because I found that really fascinating.
The leading economic indicators aggregate 10 data series that historically have turned up before expansions and down before recessions. One of the good things about them is that they're not politically loaded. They're not contingent upon some kind of methodology that says this vector, this variable should impact that. They're just looking at over time how things have moved together. And the concern there is that we've had the leading indicators down about 15 months. And typically they tend to lead turns in the economy for about 7. So, you know, if you believe the leading indicators, we ought to already be in recession.
Right.
I don't think anybody thinks we're necessarily there now, but I think it's prudent for managers to acknowledge that the risk of recession still remains elevated.
Yeah, and that's going to, the recession's been playing hide and seek this entire year. So where is it?
Sometimes you hear the concept of a rolling recession, where some sectors of the economy are contracting when others are expanding. And so in the aggregate, you don't see a lot of change. But there's no doubt. If you talk to manufacturers, you talk to construction, there are sectors of the economy that are under a lot of pressure still. And so, I try to tell the managers of these credit unions, you know, focus on your long-term strategic plan, but do be a little bit cautious and understand the risk of recession is elevated.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, labor market. This is something we're all wrestling with. Every industry seems to be wrestling with it right now. So what's the summation on that right now?
Well, labor markets are tight, and it's not just what you see in the unemployment rate, but as there's also the issue with labor force participation.
Mm-hmm.
We're still running about 0.7% lower than we were before the pandemic, meaning that if you take the population, 0.7%, which is a couple million workers, are not out there looking for a job or working.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's one of the reasons that we still see tightness in the labor markets.
Yeah.
Now, of course, the other big issue is the transition as baby boomers retire and their children come into the labor force and grandchildren. There's going to be an interesting dynamic there.
Mm-hmm. No doubt. And I love the graph that you showed up there of what the drop in labor, the loss of jobs during the recession back in, 2009 or something like that, and then you compared it to what happened during the pandemic. And what happened during the recession back in 2008 was a little tiny blip on the radar compared to what happened
during
the pandemic.
It seemed like a lot at that time. Yeah, at that time in 2008-09, we talked about 7.7 million jobs destroyed. That seemed like a lot.
Yeah.
22 million in 2020 kind of makes it.
Tripled it.
Yes.
Yeah, that was, I love that slide that you showed there. Really put it in perspective. All right, inflation. I love how you talked about how oil prices getting back to gas are kind of the albatross on the economy. Can you expand on that a little bit when it comes to inflation?
Yeah, I mean, they're part of the inflation story. Although typically when we measure inflation, many times you'll look at a concept called core, which takes out food and energy because those are sectors of the economy that are volatile and very sensitive to supply side shocks.
Mm-hmm.
But what I think does matter though is that the perception of consumers about what energy prices do alters how they see the general inflationary environment.
Yep.
Because we may take out food, we may take out energy, but those are things that a lot of households buy.
Right. And a great education for me in there was the price of natural gas,
right.
How it directly affects your electric bill.
Right.
So I love
it. We're thrilled that it's back down, but this time last year, natural gas prices were running over three times where they were back in 2020.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. All right. Now here comes the crux of what I want to talk about here is the rates, the Fed, and how they've historically, we've never seen them raise rates like this. But what you're saying, though, which is really neat, is that they won't cut rates next year and they don't want to cut them in 2024. Why is that? I found that really cool, what you said in there. Is like, and there seems to be a good reason behind this.
Well, there are talking heads now arguing the Fed's going to start cutting rates very soon. And I don't think that's the case.
Okay.
I think it's a coin flip. They may even raise rates one more time.
Right.
But I think Jay Powell, the Federal Reserve Chairman, has been very honest. He says rates will be higher for longer.
Mm-hmm.
He's not signaling that they're going to be cutting rates, in my opinion, anytime early in 2024.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you look at later in 2024, there's a lot that can happen between now and then.
Sure.
But, you know, for the Fed to be very aggressively cutting rates, it would have to be because they see that we're in recession or the risk of recession is so elevated. So, quite candidly, most people don't want them to be cutting those rates because what it would tell you about the overall economy.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, financial services like credit unions, in most cases, if they're managed appropriately, then they probably are doing a little bit better in a high interest rate environment.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
But the offset for them is, of course, if the economy slows, what does it mean for default risk on loans they've made?
Well, and tell me the negative of what happened almost the last decade where we had just these super low interest rates. It's great, you know, when you buy a house or buy a car, when you get a loan, but that can have a negative effect on the economy.
Yeah, some people even refer to it as financial repression.
Yeah.
And I think the issue here is we have to realize that savers have to be compensated too. And we tend to focus too often on the ability to borrow money and what it's going to cost.
Right.
We also want our savers to be rewarded.
Mm-hmm.
And I think finally we're in a position to where you'd have to go back to probably 2006 or 2007 to find short-term interest rates as high as they are now.
Yeah.
So at this point, savers are getting rewarded.
Mm-hmm.
On an inflation-adjusted basis, it's probably a modest positive.
Mm-hmm. You talk about, though, we're kind of normalizing rates right now. Can you expand on that a little bit? Because I go back to, when I bought my first house and we were like elated when we had a 7% interest rate. We were like, oh my gosh, we got this. And then going back to my parents, when they got like an 11% interest rate, they were over the moon about that. So tell me about the normalization of rates, because we've been so spoiled for so long now.
Well, and that creates one of the problems when you talk about the mortgage rates is that you're locking people in place. I mean, you've got people that bought a home with a 3% mortgage rate back in the early mid part of 2020, and they may be looking at moving, but they're looking at trading a 3% rate for a 7% rate. It's going to lock them in place.
Yep.
And the other thing that it does is the refinancing activity that years ago would have allowed us to bring down our monthly payments, nobody's refinancing now.
Right.
And that shows up as being, of course, not more liquidity in the economy, but also for financial institutions, some of them own mortgage-backed securities, or they have actual mortgages, and they make a bet on those mortgages refinancing periodically. Well, as interest rates go up, the propensity to repay your mortgage goes down, and that changes the dynamic.
I mean, we've considered moving, but we're one of the lucky ones to get that low interest rate, and we're like, why would we do that? I mean, so we're kind of like frozen right now, and I think a lot of people are in that situation where they're not going to.
I think that's the problem. There's low inventory, not just of new homes, but on existing as well. And the existing inventory depends upon some churn that comes from people moving or people choosing an different form of housing. Maybe they retire and they move to a retirement community.
Yeah.
And you're just not seeing that. That's being suppressed by the high mortgage rates.
Yeah, no doubt. All right. Last thing I want to talk about are deposits, which is so crucial right now in any kind of financial services industry. We're talking liquidity, 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 and nobody's got deposits going. So what's the latest in that area, and how is it affecting the folks working for credit unions?
Well, you know, one of the consequences of the Fed's very aggressive monetary policy in 2020 and 2021 was they pumped a lot of liquidity in the economy.
Yep.
So that's why, whether you're looking at big money center banks or you're looking at your neighborhood credit union, they really didn't have to pay up for deposits.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now we're seeing an environment where there is competition from the money market funds and from the treasury bill market, and the actual Fed balance sheet is shrinking a little bit. So I think, you know, paying up for deposits is not something that's going to go away immediately.
Yeah.
It changes the dynamic.
Yeah.
But for a financial institution, if they're able to earn more on their assets, then they can offset that increase in their cost of funding. That spread between the two, which we typically call the net interest margin, that's what really matters.
Okay.
And typically for credit unions, you do a little bit better when rates are higher.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly it's got to be managed appropriately.
Yeah, which goes back to, hey, you know, these high rates aren't such a bad thing, you know?
Right.
If we can kind of get back into that normalization. Alrighty, sir, anything else to add to wrap up here? I mean, I could talk to you all day, Roger, but...
It's always great to be with you, and it's exciting to see the leadership in the industry here, and they're navigating their way through uncertain times.
Indeed,
but
indeed.
That's unfortunately the new normal for the world.
Yeah, you got that right. All right, Roger, thank you so much for the info, and look forward to our next chat down the road.
Great to see you.
Well done, sir.
Thanks.
Keep up the good work. Quick word from our sponsor, Community Financial's present CEO, Tansley Stern's new podcast, Despite Impossible. Check out the latest On With Origins podcast with Zest AI's Mike Devere discussing the prevalence of artificial intelligence.